You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. .38 on the West Coast. Mike McNamara with you. All Marine Radio continues. And joining us, former Sergeant of Marines, currently contributing editor at SoftRep.
Yeah, how about that?
So you know he's a big timer. Alex Hollings joins us. So Alex, good morning. How you doing?
Hey man, what's going on? Thanks for having me back.
Oh, are you kidding me? You're like the most favored nation status now, man. You're a friend of the program. We love having you on.
Man, I love coming on this show. I love coming on. I really do appreciate it. Every time I get a text from you or something like that, I get excited, you know?
Well, that's a sad comment on your life, but we'll take it, though. We love it. First of all, happy birthday, Double Dog.
Hey, thanks, man. Yeah, I can't believe how many years it's been since I fit and dressed blues for one of these. You know, as a Facebook time hop pops up, it reminds me it's been a while. You know, but I'm excited. It's actually the Marine Corps birthday is 2 days before my wife's birthday.
Is it?
So it's usually an expensive time around my house. A lot of booze flowing around and whatnot.
My number two son was born on November 10th.
You know, there's a solid chance my daughter may be. You know, she's due here any day. So. I kind of have my fingers crossed, you know, I'm kind of hoping for it.
Yeah, you know, I was teaching at the basic school in Quantico, and we were supposed to have the baby at Bethesda. And honestly, if it hadn't been for the fact that the birthday was on a Friday, we would have been stuck in traffic. And Patrick would have been born in the front seat of my black Nissan Pathfinder.
See, man, this is the worst thing to be telling me, because I am genuinely terrified of my wife having this baby in our car. You know, I live in the woods of Georgia, so we're 40 minutes from the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, and so we've got to drive 40 minutes towards Atlanta.
Well,
I'm planning alternate routes.
It's your first kid, so normally the number one doesn't come that fast. So we get to Bethesda, thank God, no traffic, right? As we're going in, Susan is puking into the planters, and she's like, oh, she's puking, and, you know, she's trying to walk, you know, and I've got one of her arms, and, you know, they're kind of coming towards us with a wheelchair, and she bends over and pukes in the planter, and then I look down, and I notice that the flowers are plastic, so there's like nothing biodegradable about this. And then she says, oh, I feel so bad, I'm puking in their planner. And I looked down, I said, you know what, if I was you, I don't know that I'd give a rip about their planner at this point. And
so they
check us in, we go up to the delivery room, and the doctor checks her, and he says, you're dilated to like 8.5 centimeters, like this baby's ready to come. And she was, the first one, I think she was in labor for 9 hours. And so her dad's a doctor, and he said, look, you know, and her mother had 8 kids, and they were like, Susan, have an epidural. And because the last time she didn't have one, because our doctor was on vacation, the new doctor wasn't comfortable with it, blah, blah, blah. So now number two, we're going to have the epidural. And the doctor looks at her and says, I can't give you the epidural because the baby's
too far along.
Yeah, the baby's coming. And with that, she starts to cry, and she starts to hyperventilate. Man. And like, well, before this happened, the doctor looks at me and goes, so, Dad, is this your first? I said, no, this is number two. And he said, do you know what it is, boy or girl? No idea, doc. But he's a Navy doc, right? Lieutenant commander or something like that. And he looks at me, and I said, do you know what? I said, do you know what day it is? He said, Friday? And I said, no, today's the birthday of the Marine Corps. Now, this is going to sound sexist, so, and I'm going to apologize for it in advance. But this is the truth, and this is what I said as a father. I said, do you think this woman's going to give me a girl on the feast day of the Marine Corps? And he looked at me. He looked at me like I was an idiot, right? So now back to Susan. She begins to hyperventilate, right? And now I'm the labor coach, right? I took that shit seriously. So I looked down. I said, "Hey, look at me." I said, "Stop being a baby, Susan." I said, "You're not getting the epidural. Suck it up. Grit your teeth. And we're having this baby right now. You got it?" And she looks mean. And the nurse, I didn't realize the nurse was looking at me like she wanted to stab me. And,
yeah.
And, you know, and I was holding Susan's hand, and I grabbed it tight, and she said, okay. And with that, you know, Patrick came out swinging a chain. So when Patrick comes out, I look, and the doctor looks at me and says, "It's a boy." And I said, I put my hands up. I said, "I told you, man, what's up?" And he looked at me like, "Oh, my God, where do we find such morons?" But let me just tell you, one thing that never gets old, you know, the miracle of birth and seeing that is just absolutely amazing, absolutely amazing. And then you're sitting there staring at another little human being that joined your family. And it's the cool, becoming a parent, the coolest thing, man. So are you all psychologically locked in for that?
I think so, man. You know, I've been, you know me, I'm a Marine. I prepare for every possible, you know, scenario that I can come up with. When I don't have something actively to be doing to get ready, I'm doing, like, random bullshit. Like, I built a whole wall of powerful women in the nursery just so that she could see people like Peggy Whitson, you know, the International Space Station commander. You know, she's got a bunch of records for the longest time any American's ever spent in space. You know, I want my daughter to... I want the first things that she sees on her wall to be stuff like that, you know? And so that's what I've been mostly focused on, because, man, my wife's been making this so easy on me. She won't let me run out to the store in the middle of the night to get her ice cream as an excuse to get me ice cream. You know, she's really made this real simple, you know? So it's been a painless scenario for me so far. I've just been trying to find ways to keep busy, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so now are you confident that, you know, you're not going to pass out in the delivery room and all that?
I'm good in the bind. You know, if my history says anything, I handle emergency situations real well. It's not until 15 minutes after the emergency passes that I start to freak out, you know. So I think chances are good that I'll be just fine throughout, and then as soon as you give me 15, 20 minutes to myself, you know, then I'll freak out and kind of ball up in the corner. But I'm usually pretty good at during the moment,
okay.
You know?
Just know that you'll live with it. Whatever you do, you'll live with it for the rest of your life. So I don't know if you need to take a smelling salt in there or what, but yeah, it's a pretty wild... pretty wild and cool place. I'm not lying. And I'll just tell you, if you need help in the middle of it, call me. I am one of the greatest labor coaches in the history of labor. If they had a labor coach hall of fame, I would be like, oh yeah, McNamara, he's in that thing. No, without a doubt, he's in it.
This is perfect. So what I'll do, if I start getting lightheaded, I'm going to throw you on speaker.
Yeah.
And just leave it next to my wife's head, and you know, and I'll go take a nap in the corner.
No. What I'll first gonna do is like, yo, sissy boy, suck it up and get in here and do your job. See, and then once you hear that kind of treatment, like, your feelings don't matter. It's your ass over here, man. There's other people. Then you'd be like, oh, shit, that's right. That's me. Let's go. Let's do this. And then you'd be like, all right, Mac, I'm out. Thanks. Click. So it'd just be like
you're like a labor coach.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good term.
That's a job.
That's a job. I'm a labor coach. Coach, or like if you need a pinch hitter. You know, like, hey, Mac, I can't do this. Could you fly out here and handle this for me? Absolutely, man. I'll pinch hit for anybody because the military. And, I never have seen, you know, the one thing I've never seen the placenta. You know, because.
The part that I'm not looking forward to. Man. Well, I'm good with my blood and
right.
My goo.
Right.
It's other people's blood and goo that tends to not respond
well. Well, it's kind of crazy, you know? Because, you know, here your wife is, and then, you know, I don't know where you're, like, you'll position yourself, but, like, I would move around, like any good commander on the battlefield, I would move around the battlefield to the place where I could best influence the action. And so I can't remember which kid it was, but, you know, I remember once standing, like, at the receiving end. Right, and so they've got your wife's legs up, and you're standing there, and the doctor's like, he's like a mechanic, and now they've got all this stuff, they've got like there's this big kind of plastic. I don't know what you, it's like, it extends like between her legs and up to where she's laying, so that they're just like wiping stuff off and throwing stuff in, you know, on the floor, but the floor is just plastic trough. So they got, you know, and he's just standing there like talking to me. He goes, hey, you want to see the baby's head? And I'm like, yeah. So he like, yeah. He opens the hood, and I'm looking in there. I'm like, I don't see the baby's head. He goes, yeah, look right here. I'm like, what? He goes, and then he took his finger and he was like, there's blood and stuff in there from the episiotomy and yada yada yada. And he takes his hand and you could see him moving like hair. And I was like, oh man, look at that. And I said, is everything okay? He goes, yeah. No, your wife's healthy. She's doing great. And then my wife heard that. She goes, I don't think so. and he says, look, you're almost ready to push. The doc's just, you know, he's acting like a mechanic. Like, yeah, this is going to happen and this is going to happen. And she's doing great. And you're going to have a baby here pretty soon. I was like, hey, that's cool, doc. So, no, it was very cool. And the nurses and the doctors, they were awesome. They were absolutely awesome. So, yeah. So I thoroughly enjoyed every one of them. And it was, there was about 16 years difference between the number one and number four. And so technology had changed a lot by the time number four rolled around, Colleen. And it was like all this, like, the room had mood lighting in it, and it was all warm and all this other crazy stuff. As soon as the baby comes out, you know, we're not really talking about what we said we were going to talk about. But anyway, Alex Hawley's my guest. We're going to talk about McNamara Labor Consulting for expectant fathers. And anyway, what's your biggest?
Hey, man, that's the growth industry, man. You could start the market.
Yeah.
Start the market.
No, trust me. I've counseled people before about it. They're like, because, you know, some people are squeamish in terms of blood. You know, what do I do? And I said, hey, look, you're there for your wife. You know her. Because, you know, the story took on its own life of me calling her, you know, don't be a baby. I actually said, Susan, don't be a pussy. And so afterwards, the nurse looked at me and said, I can't believe you said that to her. I said, look, I know her. I was just speaking the language, man. And what did she do? Did she get offended and all that? You know,
because she knows you.
Right. I got her attention because she was starting to hyperventilate and none of that was going to help. And I said, and what happened? She focused and then we had the baby. And the nurse just looked at me. She goes, you're so lucky. I was ready to stab your ass. And I said, no, I wasn't being mean or an idiot to her. I just knew, you know, I knew that, you know, when she's panicked, sometimes, like, she gets like that. But she's a tough girl, and she'll come out of it. And I just had to kind of get her out of it. And she looked at me, she goes, you're lucky. But anyway, but no, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. And then you get to hold. And that's why I've never seen the placenta. As soon as a baby comes out, I'm tracking on the baby. Like, placenta? What's that? I don't know that I've ever seen that. Well, why would that be?
It makes sense. There's a pretty powerful distraction in the room at that point.
Thank you.
You know? I mean, there's your child right there.
Yeah. And you've been waiting for the little monster forever, and now all of a sudden they show up. It's like, come on. Yeah.
You know, my wife and I, we tried for years. You know, we went to doctors and stuff like that because we were having trouble conceiving. And, you know, I mean, it was 7 years in the making. You know, we were trying to have a baby in one way or another. We paused it for a bit when we moved and whatnot. But I feel like I've been an athlete my whole life, man. And it's like the big game is coming. And I'm just like sitting in the locker room waiting, you know, for them to tell us to run out in the field. And, Lord knows, once we get to the hospital and sit there for 48 hours, I'll probably be like, well, right now all I want to do is get to the hospital. And then once I'm there, I can worry about what I do from there.
As long as, as long as you've got a phone and an electrical source, right, you'll navigate everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Lord knows, knowing me, I'll be working during that 48 hours somehow.
Well, you know what I mean? If a lot of times labor comes and goes and they don't want to send her home because her water's broken or something like that. So it's all kind of different things that can happen, especially to the first time. So yeah, be prepared. And all the best of luck. And seriously, you got my cell number if you need any consulting. McNamara Coaching Labor Coaches Incorporated will be there for you.
Hey, once you hit that Fortune 500 line, give me a ring. You know, I'll come in and handle marketing or something. You know,
I will. Don't hold your breath. All right, let's first of all, let me ask you some current event questions. First of all, obviously the dominant story in the country right now is the an Air Force veteran. And the head of the VA doesn't even like us using that word for him, but it is what he is. And supposedly he was enabled in terms of buying these weapons because of an Air Force failure to report his discharge status or the felony conviction that he got while in the Air Force. Thoughts on that?
That's correct. You know, and I think that it may have actually been a semantic issue. He received a bad conduct discharge for two charges of assault, one against his ex-wife and one against her daughter, or maybe son, her child, who was a baby at the time. And this guy's messed up, man. I mean, right. He cracked the skull of the child is how the charges ended up being filed. And so he was given a bad conduct discharge, which is not a dishonorable discharge, although the mainstream media doesn't really seem to know the difference. A year in the brig and a reduction in rank. So when he was separated, the charges were filed under Article 128, which is assault, not necessarily domestic assault. A bad conduct discharge in and of itself does not prevent you from purchasing a firearm like a dishonorable would. But domestic assault charges should. And what I think really may have happened is that Headquarters Air Force or whoever it is that's responsible for, you know, entering this information into the national database, they saw charges for Article 128, which is assault. That in and of itself doesn't preclude you from being able to buy a firearm. The bad conduct discharge doesn't preclude you either. And I really think it's a matter of the clerk not reading, you know, the conviction report. And that's all it took. You know, it took one clerk with poor attention to detail, you know, maybe a chain of command that allows for that. And then fast forward a few years, you know, he was able to buy four firearms over the span of a couple of years, two in Texas and two in Colorado, I believe. And then, you know, he used his Ruger AR-556, you know, AR platform. It was a little modified. It looked like he had a bad lever on it. He had aftermarket optics. Dressed up in his best Punisher outfit and went into this church and shot up the place. But I think one good part of this story is the story about, I wish I could remember his name. I believe it was Steve something. The man who engaged the shooter as he left the church. You know, this guy heard gunfire going on in the church. Grabbed his own rifle, I believe it was an AR, and engaged. I hit him twice, you know, got him once in the torso and once in the leg, sent the dude running. And, you know, the police was still a long way out. This is a city, a town with a population of like 400. You know, it was going to take law enforcement a while to get there. He went running up to a guy driving his truck and said, hey, that guy shot up a church and we need to stop him. The guy said, yeah, hop in. They chased him for 11 miles. And the guy ended up shooting himself during the chase, because he knew he wasn't going to get away from these two good Samaritans, you know. And, you know, I know it's become a bit of a cliche now to say it, but when something awful happens, you know, I try my best to focus on those guys who run towards the sound of gunfire, those people who are trying to make a positive difference in a negative world, you know. And as awful as all this is, it could have been worse, you know, if there hadn't been a couple of people who were willing to put their own lives on the line. You know, civilians, you know, willing to put their lives on the line to help others. And I'd really like to see that become the story. You know, unfortunately, we're going to focus a lot on this. You know, he was an Air Force veteran. He's also, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, a complete piece of shit. You know, he had rape charges levied against him at one point that were ultimately dropped. Animal abuse charges that also, I believe, didn't end up coming to fruition. But there were witnesses that he was using his fists to beat his dog, you know, as his dog was laying on the ground. I mean, this guy was a real piece of work. It's unfortunate that we didn't identify that sooner. It's unfortunate that the system screwed up in such a bad way that let this happen. But the one positive that we can see from this is that there still are people out there willing to stand in the way of gunfire to try to help others. You know, and as awful as all of it is, you know, at least I can, that's a bit of a redeeming characteristic to our society, you know?
Alex, in my reading of some of the work on 538, the discussion we need to get to in our country is a discussion about when you've been diagnosed with some type of personality disorder and your ability to own firearms. Because, 33,000 gun deaths in the United States, 22,000 are suicide. The probability that somebody who has these kind of personality issues is remote. But the ability that they will take their own life is not, especially if they are male. Because
I would agree with that.
And so to me, I hope that somehow or other the discussion migrates to that area of, if we're serious about something, some kind of action relative to this, then families of people with those diagnoses have to be notified that if he's a gun owner, you should look at sitting down and having a discussion with him and either changing locks on guns and the location of the keys go to somebody else, or buying a gun safe in which they don't have the combination. And it's certainly not a conversation you want to have. But if we're not willing to have that conversation, then we accept that this is just going to happen. And
I agree. I've got concerns about the mental health aspect.
Right.
Here's a personal experience one for you. When I was still on active duty, my wife and I went through a bit of a rough patch, and we decided that we would go to marriage counseling. We're not the type of people who gives up on a relationship. That's why we've been together for 13 years. And, so we started going to this one marriage counselor because he was covered by TRICARE. And that was literally the only qualification that we were looking for. I know better now. He was awful. He was genuinely bad. We would, we would go to marriage counseling on Tuesday nights holding hands on our way, and we'd be fighting all the way home every time. And I was like, this is not the way the ball should be rolling. And I had just had a knee surgery, one of however many. It was when I was, in my last year in the Marine Corps. And so I was on crutches. We sat down for what would end up being our last session with him. And he was really into assigning blame. That's what he wanted. He felt as though we could come to a conclusion with each of our issues by figuring out which one of us was responsible and then saying, that one's your fault. And that's not really the way my wife and I worked. And as the conversation went on, and she and I had talked about it on the way there, we're not going to let him play that game with us this time. We're going to try to be a team about this. And when I told him, I was like, listen, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say that this is her fault. This is our fault. That's why we're here. And he disagreed with me, and finally I was like, you know what? This is a sham. I don't think you're helping us at all. I'm leaving. And I stood up and I left. He called me the next day and told me he was going to charge me for the session that we spent 10 minutes in. And I said, go fuck yourself.
Right.
So he immediately from there contacted my command and told them that I was a threat to myself and others. Now, my command knew me. My Chief Warrant Officer Sornig, she's retired now, incredible Chief Warrant Officer, called me into her office with Major Thibodeau, who was our CO at the time, and they were like, let's have a serious conversation. What's going on? They knew me anyway. We worked together for a while. And I was like, honestly, this guy just sucks. I worry about a therapist having control over whether or not a person can own a firearm. Now, a council or a panel or some kind of checks and balances, I'm absolutely willing to discuss. But I do worry about, Joe Therapist deciding whether or not a person should be allowed to own a firearm. However, when you look at things like this, sometimes you have to go, maybe I need to make a few allowances in my own mindset in order to prevent something like this from happening again. It's easy for me, just like other people, I'm a big two-way guy, it's easy for me to dig my heels in and say, I'm not going to budge, but at this point, maybe some of us 2A guys do need to budge a little with reasonable things. We do need to have an open and honest discourse about the subject without just shutting down to the idea of, new legislation. I don't think that there'd be anything wrong, for instance, with banning the bump stocks, for instance, that were used in the Vegas shooting.
Right.
I'm not opposed to banning bump stocks whatsoever. We need to be able to be reasonable with one another on either side of this debate to find a middle ground that really might work. And I hope that we can do that.
Well, no, it's just interesting in terms of finding solutions. again, when you go through the numbers, and I thought the articles that 538 have done have been, I mean, look, if you want to talk about gun control after this event, then, you know, then it's the wrong issue to talk about, because in the initial reporting was that his discharge was dishonorable, right? The guy can't own a weapon, you know?
Absolutely.
Period. So that's not the issue. However he acquired them would have been probably private sales illegally, and so that's not, you know, that's not the issue we need to talk about here. What we need to talk about is people that are deep with mental health problems. And so I've actually heard it mentioned now. I mean, the president said it, and I heard, I think Dana Perino talk about it on Fox News, referencing the 538 data. And so to me, it's, again, I agree with you. The question is, what kind of system is it? You know, is it, and who decides that you, you know, you get that diagnosis? And so to me, is there not a system that we can use? And then if you come out of that check gets taken off your, you know, the database and whatnot. I don't know exactly how it would work. I do know that that's the direction the discussion needs to go in, because guys like this, I mean, if you had a system like this, this guy has red flags everywhere in terms of
everywhere.
In terms of his own behavior. And so red flags everywhere. And now he's posting pictures of some kind of, AR type rifle on Facebook. That ought to get somebody's attention.
And how many violent charges how many times can you be charged with a violent crime with it not necessarily going all the way to conviction before somebody starts going, maybe we should think about this guy? You know? I mean, when you already cracked the skull of a baby intentionally, did a year in prison for it, you get out, you get charged with rape, somehow you get out of that. You get charged with animal cruelty, somehow you get out of that. It seems that someone at least was aware of the fact that he had been threatening his current estranged wife's family, which appears to be the motive in the shooting. How many of these red flags do we need before somebody... I guess the question is, how do you establish a mechanism that does so fairly? And to be honest, maybe I'm not the guy to ask that question.
I genuinely don't know. And I'll tell you why. When I was doing radio up in Minnesota, right on the Minnesota-North Dakota border, a town of about 100,000 people, there was a case where a girl going to the University of North Dakota was followed to her car in the parking lot. She's working at Victoria's Secret, got followed to her car in a parking lot in, I want to say, November, December time frame. She was on her cell phone, so not really paying attention, and she was essentially jumped, silenced, raped and assaulted, and then murdered, and her body dumped under the ice of a river up there.
Jesus.
Exactly. This was his fifth violent offense. He started out physically assaulting with his hands, then with a knife, then with a knife and something else, then with a gun. He'd gone to prison, never participated in any kind of offender treatment program, never admitted that he did anything wrong. But, you know, when he gets to get out, he gets to get out. No matter if he's, you know, now this is a four-time convicted. He was out for less than a year before he did this. And so it seems to me that their right to be free trumps your right to be safe. And that just doesn't, I agree with you. Like, isn't somebody sitting there watching all of this saying, you know what? This guy's a predator. He's a predator. He's not a human. He's in human form, but he's a predator. And, you know, we should have a mechanism that deals with predators. Especially when after you've done it for the fourth time. So I'm, and again, this whole, our whole reluctance of, you know, enforcing the whole three strikes thing. You know, oh, it's so unfair. Well, you know what? Not to Drew Shadeen's family, it's not. I mean, beautiful young girl.
You know, I would argue when it comes to the three strikes thing, I'm normally totally opposed to it. And right. The reason why is because I'm opposed to nonviolent crime, three strike.
I agree.
I don't think that a guy who gets caught with a bag of weed three times should be life in jail in California, as has happened.
Agreed.
However,
no, absolutely agree. No, to me, the criteria is when you prey on other people.
Exactly. I would agree with that completely.
Yeah, you need to go to Devil's Island and just go away because you can't live amongst us. You can't.
You know, these people, they tend to escalate over time. You know, I've done a little bit of reading into it just because I've covered serial killers before and stuff. And what I've read, you know, I'm not an expert in this field by any stretch.
Right.
But what I've read is that usually the way that you end up turning to this type of violence is by giving yourself personal allowances. You know, you start, but you have these urges. And, you know, but you know not to. Even if you're a sociopath, you know to avoid the repercussions, right? But, you know, you start to give yourself little allowances. Well, I'm going to kill this cat. You know, well, I'm going to hurt that person, but I'm not going to kill him. And it gets progressively worse and more violent until, you know, your inner predator is fully realized. You know, and these guys, they're wired wrong.
Right.
But they know to avoid society's repercussions for their violent tendencies, but only for so long. They get progressively more violent, progressively more dangerous, the longer they're allowed to operate, especially if the repercussions aren't sufficient to stop them from doing it. You know, if you commit a violent crime and go to jail for a year, like he did, he got out of jail at, you know, 22, 23 years old, with a bad conduct discharge that apparently wasn't reported properly, so he had very few repercussions in terms of his actual life. You know, so what happened? It got progressively worse. He was beating animals, possibly raping women, and then ultimately, you know, murdering 26 people, including a 17-month-old child, a woman who was 5 months pregnant. That's insane, you know? But just like you're saying, there's a long trail of red flags that led to this incident. And I'm not necessarily blaming any group or any agency specifically for not identifying that trail, but I think, like you're saying, we need to have a frank discussion as a society as to how we can establish that agency or that group that we would hope could identify these red flags.
And now, you know, we used to have a system where you could be committed to a mental health facility, right? And the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest chronicled, you know, life in one of them, and it was not good. But there were quote-unquote sanitariums, you know, in just about in every county around the country that dealt with people that had these kind of issues and they were committed. Well, they, you know, you can't do that anymore. They have a right.
You know, and maybe you've got a good point there. We tend to think, when we think sanitariums and institutions like that, we tend to think of them in terms of just the egregious human rights violations that occurred back then.
Right.
But you don't necessarily have to have an institution of that sort that also commits human rights violations. You could treat them with respect. You could give them good treatment. But it might be in our best interest to have something in between being a free citizen in society, being locked up for a crime that you committed, and being able to be secluded and treated for your violent tendencies, you know, especially in a case like this. It's tough, though. I hate to say, you know, this guy who gets arrested 3 times for getting in fights in high school should go away forever. You have to, you know, you've got to use a fine-tooth comb as you sift through the cases.
Right.
But in some instances, it seems clear to me that some people just aren't fit for society.
And he's,
you know?
and look, and he clearly wasn't, and he demonstrated it on multiple occasions. Yet again, I think there's a reluctance on the part of us as a society to come down on the side of, look, your daughter's right to be free trumps his right to be a predator or to violate that line repeatedly. But it just seems to me, when you look at cases like this, and this is one of, you know, millions around the country, that how much predatory activity can you engage in before somebody throws your ass in jail? I mean, it's astounding. It's astounding to me.
You know, and one of the big issues that I see with it is the difference in sentencing. You know, you'll see a kid, I forgot the kid's name, but, you know, he was sentenced to, I think, probation for a rape conviction last year, and everyone was in an uproar about it. You'll see other people, you know, convicted of a much lesser crime, you know, and they'll go to jail for significantly longer based on the court system, the judge presiding, you know, socioeconomic considerations. That's a big issue for me as well, because it makes you wonder, okay, so this guy cracked a child's skull and he did a year in the brig. I don't think a year in the brig was sufficient for that. I don't think a bad conduct discharge was sufficient for that. I think a dishonorable discharge would have been appropriate. But there's a lot of leeway when it comes to executing these types of trials, especially when it comes to court-martial with the UCMJ, but when it comes to sentencing as well, maybe that leeway is a good thing, and I'm just too ignorant of the judicial system to understand it. But I don't think that you should be able to crack a child's skull in an attempt to kill it and do a year in the brig and then walk away repercussion free.
Yeah, we're all good. We're all good. I've got an email for you. Mac, I'd be curious to hear Alex's thoughts on the Bergdahl verdict.
Oh, man, I'm mad about the Bergdahl verdict. Now, I know a lot of people have said he spent 5 years with the Taliban, likely being abused, likely being tortured. I'm sure it was awful for him throughout those 5 years. It will also be awful for the rest of their lives, for the soldiers, sailors, Marines that were injured trying to save Bergdahl or trying to find him, the families of the people who died in those efforts. It's going to be rough on them forever, too. Bo Bergdahl, this is, you know, an old story I heard in high school that I really liked, was, you know, it's about this guy who, you know, they're two construction workers, and every day at lunch, one of them opens up his lunchbox and he goes, "Oh, God damn it, tuna sandwich again. I hate tuna." Finally, after a few weeks, his buddy's like, "Man, if you don't like tuna sandwiches, why don't you just tell your wife to make something different?" And he's like, "Oh, no, I'm not married. I make my own sandwiches." Bo Bergdahl made his own sandwich. The fact that it was bad is not my concern. To be perfectly frank, I genuinely believe, I understand that there's some question as far as the official record, but I genuinely believe that he left his post to pursue the Taliban. I believe he was looking for them. I believe that he found them. And when he found them, it didn't pan out the way he hoped. I don't care. I'll be honest. You know, I try really hard to be objective and even keeled when it comes to a lot of these things. But when you read the testimony of that Navy SEAL who got shot in the leg and had his service dog shot in the head during an operation 9 days after Bergdahl disappeared, trying to rescue him from where they thought he was, you know, that guy is going to be walking into the limp for the rest of his life, you know? And that's one guy. That's one Navy SEAL, you know, that had to leave, you know, a storied career in the military, had to start a new life with a limitation. Granted, not as bad as some others, but a new life with this limitation. All because this one punk kid, which is what Bergdahl was at the time, he was a punk kid, thought that he knew better. You know, he thought that he knew better than his command. Maybe there were issues there. I don't know anyone who's ever served in the military who didn't at one time or another think that there were issues with their command. You know, there's no excuse for what he did. And so then when we say the immediate repercussions for his actions, well, that was punishment enough. I don't agree. The immediate repercussions for his actions was just nature's way of working itself out. He still committed a crime, and in my opinion, deserves to do time for it.
How about the broader message that it sends in terms of the UCMJ has two purposes. One, it's to adjudicate individual cases. Two, though, it has another purpose that the civilian criminal justice system doesn't, and that is to maintain good order and discipline in the United States military. What message does it send that your feelings are more important than your unit's mission, and that, you know what, whatever stupidness you engage in, we'll listen to your story and we'll give it credence. Because that's the vibe I feel and look, they could have given him 30 years in prison, suspended 29 of it, and I would have been okay with that. Okay, look, you know, he's going to go to jail for a year. But to give him zero and say, yeah, he suffered enough, I don't know, for whatever reason, I'm with you, that doesn't sit well with me. And I think it sends the wrong message. And the same thing with Bradley Manning's nonsense. You can do what you want. Right, and you will be relieved of the consequences of your actions. And
not only that, but you can become a folk hero. I mean, Bradley Chelsea Manning is very popular on social media.
Right,
you know, I understand Harvard invited her to talk, and then gets invited.
We're going to make her a fellow.
Jack Murphy is the editor in chief of Soft Rep. You know. Right. Jack's in a lot of circles that I'm not in, you know, and so he and I were talking in the meeting the other day, and he was telling me that, so Chelsea Manning's driving around Manhattan where she's got a penthouse in Manhattan, driving around in an armored SUV with a full-time security guard.
Nice.
So Jack reached out to some of the people he knows in New York City and was like, hey, man, how much does, like, one SUV with one armed security guard cost, you know, in Manhattan? And they were like, honestly, $100,000, $150,000 a year is what just security for Chelsea Manning is costing. And the question that I have is, who's paying for that? It's not the U.S. government. I'm not suggesting that.
Who is?
Someone is. Someone with financial interest in Chelsea Manning is paying for the security. You know, she's a folk hero already. She tweets nothing but rainbow emojis and says we're going to start the revolution. I don't think that there's actually a real political agenda behind it because it's nonsensical. But this is the precedent that we're setting. You know, Chelsea Manning committed treason. Now you're a folk hero. You know, Bo Bergdahl committed treason. Walk away scot-free. You know, and that's. It's a troubling precedent, in my opinion. Because, like you said, an important facet of the UCM.
Listen to this email. Mac, what does Alex think that the average Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps thinks when he sees that verdict? Or do you think that the average Lance Corporal pays any attention at all?
I think that the average Lance Corporal is a real tough thing to say because the Lance Corporal is the biggest rank in the Marine Corps. You know, there's... Lord knows there's probably 100,000 plus active duty Lance Corporals right now. And when I was a Lance Corporal, I had very similar beliefs to the ones that I do today, but I've worked with Lance Corporals who wouldn't have agreed with me, you know? I think that your average Lance Corporal looks at this and goes, oh, Bergdahl's a shitbag. He got away with it, and that sucks, and I'm mad. However, my concern is not your average Lance Corporal because Bo Bergdahl was not your average soldier.
Right.
My concern is that 1%. My concern is that 1% of Marines who enlisted because they wanted the tough sticker or to get away from something or they thought that it was for them, they got in and they realized that it wasn't and that they're miserable. We all know those Marines. We all served with them. You know, the ones that start trying to think of ways to get out because 4 years seems like just too long. You know, I knew two Marines who, after a really unfortunate incident in my command, faked psychological issues to get medically separated, you know. And then one of them came back to me a few years ago and asked if I would write a letter on their behalf to try to get them back in because they wanted to fulfill their commitment. And I told them flat out, fuck you. You know, you demonstrated to me at the time, we had this conversation at the time, you demonstrated to me that you lacked the commitment, you weren't interested in serving, you were here for personal reasons. I don't think that you've changed as a person in 3 years. You know, I'm not going to do it. That's the guy that I worry about, is that person... The next Bo Bergdahl who sees, you know what, it might not be that bad. You know, obviously I hope I don't get kidnapped by the Taliban, but, you know, I'll choose my allies better. Those are the concerns. Your average Lance Corporal, he's a good guy. She's a good girl. You know, they're legit Marines. Not your average Lance Corporal I'm worried about. It's that 1%, you know, and I'd really like to see a precedent set that tells that 1% that there are real repercussions for your action.
My guest this morning on a Tuesday, Election Day, so get out there and vote, is Alex Holland. He is a former Marines sergeant. He's an expectant father. He is a contributing editor at SoftRep, where you can see his work. We're going to take a break right now. And, Alex, if you'll hold on with us, when we come back, want to talk about a new column that you're writing. So give everybody a 30-second teaser. Tell everybody about Old Man PT.
You got it. So it's a weekly column on SoftRep. It goes up Sunday nights. It's all about realistic and reasonable fitness for realistic functional people, which is why it's called Old Man Fitness, because I might not be that old in years, but I am in mileage, you know? So it's all about real-life PT for real people instead of trying to become an Instagram fitness model, effectively.
All right. There you have it. No Instagram fitness model. I like that. We're going to take a quick break. More of Alex coming up next on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. Looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. group's called Creedence Clearwater Revival. CCR, if you know about it. If you don't know about it, then don't worry about it, okay? We continue on. Yeah. John Fogerty. That sounds like John. Yeah, it is, okay? Don't worry about it. All right, Alex, I got another email for you. Mac, I'd be curious, as a perspective, is Alex following the court martials at Paris Island and his thoughts on some of the evidence that has come out in the trials that are being conducted there? Are you following those at all, Alex?
I'm only in a cursory way. I'm not incredibly privy to the whole thing. I've got a few friends that are on the drill field and one that just recently left it. So I know more about it via shared memes on Facebook than I do about the official documents. So I'm probably not the best guy, you know, to talk about that. But, you know, it's another one of those really tough issues where I try to draw that line between, in all honesty, I'm kind of a pro-hazing guy in a lot of ways. You know, I'm not a pro-overboard hazing guy. I do think that there's a value, though, in shared pain. I think there's a value in earned pain. But even in my time in the Marine Corps, the hazing standards were pretty strict, you know. I know that every Marine generation is aware of things like, you know, when you get promoted, having your chevrons stamped into your collarbones, or when you first become a corporal, having your blood stripe, you know, beat into your legs and things like that. And it sounds really bad when you talk about it in a vacuum. But to be honest with you, those are some of my best memories of the Marine Corps, was the camaraderie that came out of those situations. You know, I came up in a time when I was playing football for the Marine Corps at the time. When I picked up corporal, you know, I won a meritorious board. And you better believe that there were some senior ranking Marines involved in kicking the living hell out of me to celebrate that. Right. You know, and I was proud of that. It was something that I took home with me. That some, you know, senior Marines recognized what I had been doing, you know what I mean, and played a role in the celebration of me busting my ass. You know, but of course, there's a line you got to draw, and once you draw that line, you need to not cross it. I could not tell you specifically how many of those people did or did not cross the line, you know, but it's a tough subject.
No, you know what, I would tell you, you know, to me, I'm like you. I have fond memories of the initiations that I was either a part of or in being welcomed into or welcoming somebody else. As a company commander, you know, when I promoted, I never put the backs on rank, right?
And you're not gonna go home with a VA rating over somebody smacking a pin into your shoulder.
No.
You know, like
right. No, I remember, you know, the first time I went to the field as a grunt. You know, when we had enough guys, there might have been the second time, but we had enough new guys that had joined the unit that, you know, you were gonna either E2 qualified, in which case you chopped your cover up. Thinking that you were digging a hole, or you were going to do something called psychological sit-ups, which meant that they blindfolded you, got you in a position to do a sit-up, and then probably the nastiest guy in the company, he pulled his pants down, squatted over you, and as you started to do the sit-up, right, your nose wound up in the crack of his ass. And not knowing what happened, you'd probably do that two or three times before you realized something was wrong. Somebody would have snapped a picture by that time. It was great fun, right? It was hilarious. It was the stupid things it creates, the barrier.
It is, but you know, it's a stupid thing. It's a silly thing, but it creates this kind of barrier to entry,
right,
that allows you to feel like you're a part of something.
And you are, because at the end of it, right, what happens? Everybody's laughing. Guys are coming up to you
exactly.
And telling you that, hey, man, I did that too. It was horrible, but that was hilarious. And the same thing with the whole showback ceremony. What a fun day. But there's a difference, as you pointed out. There's a difference between crawling through garbage and eating it. There's a difference between having Tabasco sauce squirted in your eyes once or twice and having to drink a whole bottle of it. You know, so, and the problem is when we get the dropped on your head at birth crew get involved in this and they turn it into stupid. Like, for instance, I first saw the blood stripe on the grinder after formation being done in public, not in the barracks, but in public. I mean, it was just accepted, you know, and I remember seeing it, and I remember one of the idiots, right, not just kneeing somebody, but, and there's a difference, trying to hurt somebody. Because they didn't like
it. Maliciousness is the difference.
Right. Because they didn't like
it. One person's doing it as a part of the group, yeah.
And so I remember looking at my staff sergeant and I said, you need to go put an end to that. Right now.
And
he looked at me and he said, but sir, I said, no. The idiots out there, you yoke their ass up, right, and you make them pay for that. That's not what that's about. You're not supposed to send that guy to the hospital, okay? That's not what that's about.
Exactly.
And so,
exactly.
And so, but it was very much a part of the cult and being accepted. And whether you were on a football team or the different initiations you went through in life, these were the Marine Corps initiations. So I'm with you. I have fond memories of that stuff, but the stuff that you're talking about. If it's true, if the testimony is true and they've sworn that it is, you know, if you're a Muslim recruit, to be called a terrorist alienates you from the group.
Agreed.
I think that's incredibly unfair, you know, I've always thought putting people in dryers was funny, right? Spinning them around a couple times, they get out and everybody's laughing, you know, but when you do that under those circumstances and you don't let them out till they say, I'm not a Muslim anymore. When you're calling them terrorists, when you put a guy in a McMack belt in a submission position, and then you make him simulate slitting a non-Muslim Marine's throat because he's a terrorist, that's out and out crazy, and you wonder where the hell are other Marines to put an end to this crap because it's not
and
right.
You know, it comes back to the idea behind intent. You know, I'm big into intent when it comes to language because in our culture. We associate a lot of power, probably unduly, with specific words. You know, there are charged words. You know, some of them are considered curse words. Some of them are slurs. Some of them are just regular language that you use, like descriptors and adjectives, but will charge a subject, you know? And I'm a big believer in, if you say, like, here's a good example. If you and I were at a bar having a drink, I said something about how I was afraid, you know, that I was going to faint during childbirth, and you called me a bitch. I would not be offended or angry.
Right.
But in another completely different set of circumstances, if you call me that same word with maliciousness, with the intent to fight, it suddenly becomes a much more offensive word.
Right.
Intent is really what determines whether or not something is across the line or not in a lot of these instances. And the intent behind that, there was no positive intent. There was no positive outcome to doing that to a recruit. You know what I mean? And hazing ultimately needs to have a positive outcome or it's not hazing, it's abuse. Yeah.
Interesting. Hazing needs to have a positive outcome. I have to think about that. To me, a lot of these things are rites of passage, initiations, if you will. To me, hazing, there's intent implied in hazing. I'm hazing you. I'm not, you know, you're not joining me. I'm hazing you. And, you know, it's the stuff where, you know, you're cutting somebody's clothes up that are in the dryer and throwing them in the garbage. You're taking their clothes out of the dryer, throwing them off the third deck and into the dirt outside. And you're doing that every opportunity you can to make their life miserable. To me, that's the whole hazing piece. And
you know, and there's no positive outcome to that other than just alienating all your Marines. You know, and not just that one Marine though, because other Marines are going to be put in that uncomfortable position. If they're junior Marines, they're going to be going, I got to make sure I stay on that guy's good side so that I don't end up the next target. You know, and among your peers, you put them in that uncomfortable position of being like, are we going to let this guy lead his Marines or are we going to step in?
Right.
You know, and if the hazing gets bad, other Marines should step in. But as a Marine, as a leader, you should not put your peers in the position to have to regulate your behavior.
Right. No, I'm with you. But again, we all know there's the gifted among us. And then you get to what I call leadership at the point of confrontation. And that is, you do it, and I look at you and I say, hey, Hollings, knock that crap off, man. And you say, shut up, Matt Namara, what are you going to do about it? And at that point to me, that's when the Marine Corps has to promote fighting.
Agreed. I agree with that.
And the commandant said on this program, because I asked him, he said, Mac, do you think if you stand up and you fight for that, that you're gonna be punished by the Marine Corps? He goes, hell no. And because the question I put to him was, and I call it leadership at the point of confrontation, urinating on bodies, right? Hazing, calling a recruit a Muslim, the taking a guy out of his home and shooting him in Iraq, simulating he's putting in an IED. If one person stand up and says, I ain't doing it, and then when whoever's leading it looks at him and says, well, what's wrong with you? You're a pussy. And you say, hey, Sergeant, you know, Hollings, do you want to fight? I'll fight you right now. I'm not doing it. If somebody does that, none of those guys go to the brig. None of their lives are drugged through the streets. None of them get the dishonorable discharges that they get. The institution doesn't suffer.
Dakota Myers is an example of that.
In every one of those cases, there were staff NCOs at a minimum, and staff NCOs and officers in the vicinity. Stood there and allowed it to happen.
Yeah, that's unacceptable, man. You know, it is. Dakota Meyer is a great example of a Marine who disobeyed an order to do the right thing. And he was rewarded for that because he earned that. You know, he earned his Congressional Medal of Honor. But getting an order or being told by a peer of the same rank, don't do this, does not always necessarily mean you shouldn't. You know, but you've got to keep your head on your shoulders and trust yourself. You know, I write a lot of columns that are about, you know, I've been to a lot of different countries, you know, 20-some-odd different countries.
Really?
I traveled to a lot of them with my wife, you know, because we used to really enjoy traveling. And, you know, there's a lot of circumstances. One time we were in Turkey, and, you know, a guy was following us in a white, unmarked van taking pictures of my wife with a cell phone. And it very well could have been that he was like, hey, that lady's pretty. But we're in Turkey. I'm not familiar with the territory. That's not a good situation to be in. I made the command decision that we need to get the hell back to a safe space. You know, and we missed a whole afternoon of sightseeing, you know, in Izmir. But we went home safe after that trip. You've got to trust your gut. And if you can trust your gut when you're in a comfortable situation with your wife, you should trust your gut when you're in a situation with your peers. You know, it's not a different gut just because you're in different circumstances. You know, you should trust yourself and stand up for what you believe in. Stand up for what you think is right. There's a good chance that the guy who's about to make that bad decision might just be in the wrong state of mind, and you very well, it might not always have to result in a fight. You know, if it does, I credit you for doing it, but it doesn't necessarily have to. Sometimes all it takes is that one guy to be the voice of reason.
No, you know what, and I absolutely agree with you, because a lot of time when you do confront somebody who again, is clearly doing something wrong, you know, clearly doing something wrong. And in these cases, these are all marquee leadership failures in the Marine Corps, right, that have reverberated through the American media, through our culture. And, you know, you can throw Marines United.
Those assholes.
Yeah, those guys in there as well, you know. And why did it take so long for somebody to say, hey, what is this? Knock it off. And so to me, it is just – it's hard to stand up to your peers when everybody's going one way and you want to go the other is not easy. But it's, I don't know, we need to teach it better, and Marine Corps needs to teach it better, because, you know, you may be the guy that saves a whole group of guys from going out down a road that they don't want to go in. They were either angry, the experiences in combat affected them, and not only did they want revenge, now they wanted to start, you know, treating bodies with disrespect. Well, we all know there's a reason that you keep your honor clean. The first reason, though, is for you, not for anybody else. You have to live with the consequences as it echoes in through the rest of your life. As you sit in Georgia up late at night, wondering if somebody's going to come down the road and test your security apparatus. If you're while you're doing that, right, those thoughts could drift back to you, whether you behave well or not.
And they will. Mistakes that I've made do. You know, I think for all of us.
Right.
You know, I'm sure anybody can attest to this. You know, I'm a fighter, right? So when I was training in 29 Palms, I was on the Marine Corps' first mixed martial arts team out there, Fight Club 29. And I'm as guilty as anybody of not applying slow, steady pressure to a submission or a choke when I'm heated. You know, I tap out 30 times a day. I'm not a super badass. But, you know, every once in a while you get riled up, you get, you know, in the heat of the moment, and you try to just pull a dude's head off because, you know, he submitted you the last 3 times in a row. We got to do this for another hour. I'm tired. I'm mad. I don't have the physical strength to try to regulate how hard I'm going to put sink this choke in. And I've had guys, just as I've been the guy, go, hey, Holly, you know, reel it in. 50%, 60%, slow, steady pressure. You know, it's not because I'm a bad guy and I wanted to murder this dude. He's my friend. I'm tired. I'm mad. I'm frustrated. I'm not in the right state of mind. And having that person there, usually it was a coach, to say, hey, remember where you are and what you're doing, was all it took to bring me right back to level, bring me right back to center, and let me keep training without making dumb mistakes. That's a training environment, but the principle holds wherever you go.
Right. Right.
You know?
Interesting. All right, let's talk about Old Man Fitness. How did this come to you? Is it because you still want to be fit and now you're an old man? How did this come to you?
I had let my fitness game slack a little bit when I first moved to Georgia. And you know, I talked about it a bit. So I was like, you know, my 1911 started to chew into my love handle when I could still carry. You know, this was an issue for me. And, you know, when I found out that my wife was pregnant, especially, I was like, I really want to up my game. You know, I've been working out throughout, but I want to make sure my father was not in good shape. You know, he never came out and played catch with us. He just couldn't do it. You know, he looked like Santa Claus my whole life. And I was like, I don't want to be that dad, you know? And so I went online and I started looking around for, you know, I was a certified personal trainer a few years back. I let the cert lapse because I decided it wasn't a career field I wanted to pursue.
Right.
But I was like, let's see what new science there is out there. Maybe there's something that I can see that'll help me kickstart like a new regimen or something like that. And what I found, unfortunately, and I think what most people find when they go on the internet looking for fitness advice, is lots and lots of bull. You know, lots of people saying, 6-day workout to get you back to abs, or all you need to do is go on this diet, you know, Nutrisystem, Atkins, Paleo. This magic diet is the solution to your weight problem. And the problem with all of that is that it's just not true. You know, fitness can be as complicated or as simple as you want it to be. You know, the more extreme your goals are, the more complicated your fitness regimen has to become. But if you've got regular functional goals, you know, if you're just a regular person that wants to feel better about yourself as you go to work each morning, you know, you want to just make sure your chest is still sticking out further than your stomach, stuff like that, you don't have to be counting macros and weighing your meals. You don't have to be barring yourself from eating anything that a caveman wouldn't eat. The more extreme diet you pursue, the less likely you are to stick to it. You know, if you tell yourself, I'm never eating cake again, 2 weeks from now, you're going to say, forget that and eat a cake. If you tell yourself, I'm only going to have a little bit of cake, you'll be able to maintain that more consistently. And that was the first article. I didn't intend it to be a column. I wrote an article, something to the effect of, the secret to losing your post-service pudge isn't another fad diet. You know, it's just making better decisions over a consistent amount of time. You don't have to be extreme to get there. If you are extreme, you might get there faster, but you have a better chance of lapsing. You know, the harder core you go with it. And that first article, to be honest with you, I write a lot of articles, and that first one, you know, every once in a while you just write one for you, right? Like, I didn't really know that people would respond to it. I just wrote it because I was frustrated with the state of the internet fitness mania, you know, where you have to have sub 3% body fat or why bother, you know? And so I wrote that article as much because I just needed to get it out as anything. But to my surprise, the readers really responded to it. You know, it got a lot of traffic. It got a lot of comments. You know, when I went and tried to respond to each comment to answer questions, but throughout, I make it clear, listen, I'm not that guy you'll see on Instagram with six-pack abs that you could grade cheese on. You know, I'm a pretty big dude. You know, I'm 250 pounds. I could probably stand to lose 15 pounds, but, you know, I bench press 360 pounds, you know, all day long. I'm a pretty strong guy, but that doesn't have to be your goal either. You know, but the way that I got to where I am, which is not super impressive, but it's just where I am, is just by being consistent over a long period of time. It wasn't that I only eat protein. It wasn't that I measure my meals. It wasn't any of that. People often are like, man, you look like you're in great shape. You must be in the gym all day. I'm not. I'm in the gym an hour a day. I just do it every day. You know, and so it ended up becoming just a bit of a thing where I try my best to dispel really common fitness myths that have become so pervasive we almost accept them as facts.
Yes.
You know, like the idea that you need to go get a gym membership to get into better shape. You don't need much to get into better shape. I'm a pretty fit guy, and I've got like a crappy weight set in my basement, and that's what I use. Because what matters more is that you're doing something than it is that you're doing exactly the right thing. You know, if you want to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, there's a very specific regimen and diet that you need to pursue to get there. But most people aren't looking to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. They just want to be the big dude at the end of the bar or the fit person that doesn't have to worry about running a mile or walking 2 miles if you run out of gas. You know, like your average, a great example, you know, because a lot of the leaders are female. And there's this idea that if a woman lifts weights, it'll make her manly. And it's just not the case. You know, I know a lot of female trainers, fitness competitors, figure competitors that are very pretty, very feminine looking. It takes a lot of testosterone and a lot of time to become a bulky dude. You know, like you throw some curls into your workout regimen or squat, for instance, it's not going to turn you into a man. You know, but we've got these biases that we've been indoctrinated with through marketing. And the point of the column is to try to pick apart those biases and remind you that you don't have to run 10 miles. Just go out there and walk one today. Do it right now. That's a start. You know.
Okay. So
like
so let me ask some questions. So when you say old man PT, it's non-gender specific. You're just using that.
It is absolutely not gender specific. Okay. Old man fitness really just came from the fact that I feel like an old man. You know, and so I've had to adjust my workouts to suit, you know, 6 surgeries and lots of broken bones and torn ligaments over the years. You know, so my squat is not as good as it was when I was 25. Because I've got 2 slipped discs in my back, and I've had 2 ankle surgeries and 3 knee surgeries, you know? So I have to adjust how I squat and how much I do. You know, and that's kind of that's the real idea behind old man fitness. Is if you're 19 and you want to get into good shape, the whole internet is out there waiting for you.
Right.
You know, if you want to, like, only eat rice cakes and protein powder and, you know, take a million supplements that may or may not work because they're not FDA regulated and become an absolute machine and become Instagram famous, more power to you. I'm not knocking it. But if you're over 30, over 40, you know, and you've got some old nagging injuries you've got to worry about, you can't run 3 miles like you used to.
Right.
That doesn't mean you can't do anything. You know, and the idea is just be a real person with real fitness goals and pursue them consistently, and you'll be amazed at the results that you'll get.
Okay.
You know?
Now, so here's what I want to ask you about is there's a lot of people that get up every day and they lament the fact that they're not exercising. They hate it.
Absolutely. Right?
But those first steps, those first activities are so hard. And one of the things that caught my eye is a phrase that you use, I'll start Monday. Is that the phrase?
Yeah, those are the 3 worst, most damaging words an athlete can say.
Okay, so, you know, so talk to us about what is the key to just getting going?
Well, you know, for me, in my experience, what it was is I had been lifting throughout, but my cardio game had just really fallen off, you know, because it's no fun. I don't enjoy cardio. So at the beginning of this year, I went for a hike with my best buddy. We just, like, picked a state park in Kentucky because it was in between him and I, you know, drove 6 hours each with our go bags in the trunk, just got out, and we're like, well, let's see how we do. You know, we'll spend a few days out here. So we planned to cover 10, 12 miles a day, which is a good clip, you know?
Right.
And after that first day, it wasn't so much my cardio that had become a problem, but my feet just fell apart, man.
Right.
I had gone soft, you know? And I, in my infinite wisdom, thought I could just throw my old boots on. I hadn't worn in a year and a half and, you know, do 36 miles in 3 days, you know, without sweating it. Turns out that's wrong, man. I came home without any skin left on my feet. It was just one big blister. And I realized, you know, I've been slacking in a really important department here. But I hate cardio, and, you know, I've got bad knees, and I'm slow, and I'm heavy. So I was like, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to walk a mile today. I'm not going to be mad that I can't go run the 3 miles that I feel like I need to. I'm going to walk a mile today and just see how that treats me. And I did that for 3 days straight. And then I was like, you know what? I can walk 3 miles. Within a few weeks, I was jogging half of it, walking half of it. You know, I wasn't putting too much pressure on myself, and I think that's where a lot of people fall off, is that they wake up in the morning wishing that they were already halfway through this fitness journey. The journey is a myth, man. Fitness is a merry-go-round. You can get on and off whenever you want. You know, it's there's no destination when it comes to fitness. When you stop, your fitness game stops too. You start to go downhill, you know? So what I was really trying to, my dog's barking in the background. But what I was really trying to convey in this most recent article is stop pressuring yourself to already be there and just do what you can today. Like, give yourself allowances for that, you know? Go for a 1 mile walk and plan to stretch it to 3 next week or the week after or when you can, especially when compensating for an injury. Stop telling yourself that it's got to be all or nothing and just do something. You know,
okay,
do it right now.
So do it today and just do something. Just cross the line of departure.
If you do just something every day, you're going to be in a better place in 6 months than you are now. I promise you. Just do something every day. You know, I've got a pretty strict regimen that I follow because I feel as though it works for me.
Right.
I adjust it all the time because that's how I am. Your regimen doesn't have to be the same as mine. Your goals don't need to be the same as mine. But the commitment does. It's got to be there. You know, the guy who mows my lawn and his nephew were at my house the other day, and I came outside just to talk to him because they're great guys. You know, and I was just having a conversation, and the nephew's like, man, you know, like, how much do you bench press? You're so big. I was like, honestly, man, like, my one rep max doesn't matter. Don't get bogged down in numbers. Because he's in high school, and he's playing football, and he's trying to get stronger. Like, my one rep max doesn't really matter long term. I'm much more concerned with how many times you can do 60% of that, 70% of that. Because to me, functional fitness is what matters.
Right.
One real good strong punch, if that doesn't take down an attacker, I need to have those 10 rep sets, you know, available to me. But the commitment is what makes the difference. For me, I was 155 pounds as a PFC, and I'm 255 pounds now as an old man. You know? And there was a time where if you put 135 on the bar, I couldn't bench, you know?
That's amazing.
Whereas yesterday, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, I only have 300 pounds in my basement, and I'm for my sets, when I'm doing sets of five, I'm at over 300 pounds now. So I just threw brake rotors on the end of my bar just to get me there, and I'll buy some more weights, you know, when I can. Like, the commitment is the difference between me being that guy at 155 pounds who couldn't bench 135 to now me being a guy with 300 pounds plus brake rotors for reps. Is just that I kept at it, man. And it's not the answer people want. People want immediate gratification, but it's the truth.
Okay,
the truth is just something every day.
We're not talking to those people. Let me read you an email. Mac, one of the things I struggle with fitness is this idea I have that fitness needs to include 20 pull-ups or sets of pull-ups that approximate that. It needs to include a 3-mile run and some other type of activity. I'm not near any of that anymore, and there's this frustration in my head. I think Alex,
I can understand. I can relate.
Is speaking to me in terms of just getting off my ass and doing something. I think I'll try.
Well, you know,
the
perfect example of that.
I think I'll try that today.
You know, I'm glad to hear it. It's awesome. You know, when I was a brand new PFC, when I left boot camp, man, I could only do 7 pull-ups. You know, I was a weakling. My 155 pounds of me. There are some dudes out there that weigh 155 and are a straight pickup truck. You know, they're a badass. I was not. You know, and at the time, I didn't think that it was in the remote realm of possibility that one day I would do 20 pull-ups. You know, but what I did was I went out there, I spent every night on the pull-up bar for, you know, a year until I could do 20 pull-ups in my sleep. And I bet you did too. You know, back in the day, when you were in the same place that I was, PSDU, you were like, oh, man, I can't do 20 pull-ups. 6 months later, you were crushing it. You're at that same juncture now. You know, we're a little older, we're a little slower, but we're also smarter, you know? I used to work out like it was a fight, like I'm going to go win this fight against my weights. Now I work out like it's a partnership, you know, because I got some old injuries I got to take care of, and also I have to pay for my stuff. So if I break it, I need to buy more stuff. So, you know, I treat my stuff with respect, and I treat my body with respect. That's the benefit of age and wisdom, you know?
Okay, so now that you write about old men's fitness, give us some of the titles of your column and tell everybody where to find the column.
You got it. Well, so the first one was, as I said, it was talking about how to lose that post-service pudge. I've also got Old Man Fitness, which was breaking the number one rule of the gym, which is about maintaining perfect form. If you're a power lifter in a competition, you need to maintain perfect form. If you're doing pull-ups in a PFT, you need to maintain perfect form. But there's nothing wrong with giving yourself a little bit of a cheer allowance from time to time in the interest of progress. And what I mean by that is, you know that guy you see at the gym who like throws way too much weight on the curl bar,
right,
and then rocks his hips,
right,
to get the curl up every time?
Right.
That guy's not doing himself any favors.
Right.
However, you should be lifting to the point of failure in every set, if strength building is your goal. So I do 4 sets of 10 usually with auxiliary lifts like that.
Right.
I should be struggling, desperate, to get 7, 8, 9, and 10 in on my 4th set.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you the truth, man. If I can rock my hips a little bit on 9 and 10 and still get them up, I'm going to do it. Now, I know that that's cheating, but I also know that I'd have to stop at 8 if I didn't cheat a little.
Right.
And I would rather keep going a little bit further by giving myself an allowance and not expecting perfection at all times, just to get those in. And, you know, that's one that I've taken a bit of flack for, because I've got a lot of friends that are personal trainers that are, you know, very animate about keeping good form. And then, but then, you know, I've got other friends that do CrossFit and think that pull-ups look like whatever the hell it is that they do. You know, so it's all about finding that balance for yourself, you know, and that's kind of a running theme throughout, you know. Another one of the columns was get big, get lean, get functional, which is specifically about choosing a goal. We tend to think of fitness as a broad fitness is just an all-encompassing thing. But your fitness goals don't need to be. You know, you could be trying to build strength. You could be trying to burn fat or tone up, you know. But what you need to do is decide on that goal before you start. Because, you know, fast twitch and slow twitch muscle fiber, they work differently. And if you're focused entirely on building fast twitch muscle fiber, you know, like you're lifting real heavy weights and low sets, you're not going to lose fat as quickly as you might if you were more of a slow twitch muscle fiber focused person, like, you know, more cardio, higher repetitions, lower weights. You need to know what your goals are and then tailor your workout to them in order to really get the kind of results that you want, you know. And then most recently was stop waiting for Monday, you know. It was let this be your wake-up call. And the whole point behind it was you don't need, again, to be perfect. You just need to be doing something, you know. If you do something every day, it's going to get easier every day. And before you know it, you'll be doing those things that before you were like, oh, I wish I could just go do this. You know, now I go out and I do 3 miles a day every day. I'm not going to lie to you. Still hate it.
Do you run it? Do you walk it? Does it depend on the day, a little bit?
You
know what? Let me just tell you. Yeah. I'm 59, and that's what I do. I have 2 dogs, so take them out to get them exercise. But my spirit decides for me what I'll do. If my legs don't feel good, or if my brain doesn't feel good, you know, I just walk it and enjoy it. You know, but there'll be days when I feel good and my legs said, let's go. And I think though.
You know, and sometimes it'll sneak up on you. Sometimes you'll
right.
be a half mile in and all of a sudden you'll be like, well, hey, I feel pretty damn good. But other, you know, just like you, and I think that's probably why you're still at it, you know, is because you let your body dictate what it's capable of. But not your mind. You know, your mind is your. Human beings are inherently lazy. It's an evolutionary step to conserve calories. We want to do nothing, if at all possible. We also want real calorie dense meals, because when you're out on the plains of Savannah, that calorie dense meal was a jackpot. It wasn't just like one of 6 drive-throughs that you drove by on your way home from work. We're naturally inclined to want fat pills and to do nothing. You know?
Yeah, that is, that is the universal truth. And let me tell you, and the problem is, everywhere you go in our culture, there is nothing but great food. And there's a ton of it. When you go to eat at any restaurant, you get more food, not less. And I'll tell you, one of the things that you can do is share meals, and you can eat a lot at a restaurant and walk out and have eaten good food and split it with your spouse or, you know, it with a kid one day, and you'll be full because there's just food everywhere.
Man.
It's the food ambush.
But, you know, one of the issues, though, is that because we as human beings, we lean towards extremism, right? You know, we do it politically. We do it personally. We do it with fitness stuff, you know? And like I said about the more extreme your goals, the more complicated fitness becomes. So, like, you don't have to be extreme. You don't have to tell yourself, I'm never eating Applebee's again. You know, if you and your wife like to go to Applebee's on Wednesdays, go to Applebee's on Wednesdays. Just be conscious of the decisions that you make. You don't have to bar yourself from having an enjoyable life to be fit. You know,
you
just need to be aware and conscious.
I've always thought, Alex, one of the things I've always thought and told people, like, you could eat anything you want to, okay? But just be conscious, you know, moderation. Eat.
That's exactly it, man.
Eat.
You know?
The second and the first bite that your brain says I'm full, shove the food away. Take it and go and eat it again tomorrow. And so there's,
you know, and what it takes to do that is situational awareness. We tend to eat on autopilot. You know, I eat in front of the TV every day. I'm guilty just like everybody. And before you know it, all the food's gone. And that's when you know you're done. You know? Instead of doing that, be conscious and mindful of what you're eating when you're eating it. And it'll be a lot easier to stop eating when you're full.
Conscious and mindful, that's not those aren't really Marine words, just so you know.
Well, you know what, though?
You're straying into areas.
We've all got to evolve with the times.
Really?
Listen.
Conscious,
like I said,
and
in my
mindful?
Most recent article,
did you just say that?
I'm telling you, man, being a fitness-oriented person in some circles, it'll rack you right up there with vegans and people who drive Toyota Priuses.
Exactly.
That's the last person that anyone wants to talk to.
NPR.
You know? Yeah, exactly. But, you know, at the end of the day,
Whole Foods.
My goals are pretty simple. You know, my goals are just to, like, keep my gut in check, being able to keep up with my daughter, and protect my family if I need to. You know, I don't need 3% body fat to achieve those goals. But I do need to work at it every day. And I do need, you know, to be conscious and mindful of my effort. And it might not be the coolest thing in the world, but it works, you know? And as far as I'm concerned, making mission trumps, you know, perception. So I stand by it. Be conscious and mindful of your meals, but I will also highly recommend that you eat that steak, throw some garlic butter on it, enjoy the damn thing, you know, but then just tailor your workouts to suit.
My guest today, a contributing editor at SoftRep, and his name is Alex Hollings, former Marine Sergeant, and we're talking about old man fitness. Here's an email for you. Mac, first of all, always enjoy when Alex is on. It's kind of interesting if you track the subject matter. It started out today with labor coaching, migrated to Bo Bergdahl's sentencing, hazing, peer pressure, and now old man physical fitness. Quite the ride that you two go on a regular basis. I must say that I always enjoy his visits. My question for him, as a guy who's a little bit overweight, can I keep my same diet as Mac just kind of said and moderate it? Or are there certain things that you would tell me as a dude? And I don't listen to NPR. I don't go to Whole Foods. I don't drive a Prius. I drive a pickup. I go to the Piggly Wiggly. I like fried foods. I like guns. I like rock and roll. Not NPR. So for guys like me, any kind of sort of dieting advice that doesn't emasculate us completely?
Whoa. Absolutely. But first of all, if you're looking for a vote, you got my vote. My email. This is the thing. You definitely, changing your diet, I'm all for changing your diet, not for dieting. You know?
Wow, well said.
You know? So a diet, when you say you're going on a diet, what you're really saying is that I'm going to do this for a certain period of time until either A, I reach my goal, or B, I quit. That's what a diet is. You know, and as soon as you stop with that diet, you're going to go back to your old eating habits, and your old eating habits are going to put you right back to where you were before. So instead, what I would recommend you do is you make gradual changes to the way that you eat. You know, one of the things that I did, I still drink like I'm on active duty. It's my biggest vice. But one of the things that I did was I set a certain time in the night where I'm not going to let myself have a drink until I pass 8 o'clock at night. Because that means I'm only going to end up with two drinks tonight before I go to bed, you know? I just make slow changes that are easy to maintain. You know, instead of eating a whole box of Oreos when I sit down, which I've been known to do on multiple occasions, I go, I'm going to eat one row of these Oreos because that's too much anyway.
Right.
And I'm going to shut up. I'm not going to stop myself from eating Oreos. I'm just going to slowly cut down on how many of them I eat. That's the real secret, to create a maintainable, you know, eating, to create maintainable eating habits that don't feel like you're dieting, that don't make you feel like you're craving something you can't have. Have the stuff that you crave. Just try to cut down on the bad parts of it here and there. Try to increase the good parts of it here and there. You know, let yourself cheat from time to time. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you don't, if, as long as you don't have a calendar shoot at the end of the month, it's okay to have that piece of cake. You know? But don't go on a diet. Instead, just think about what you're eating when you're at the store, when you're at lunch, you know, when you're eating on the run. Try to pick something that's a little bit healthier. Or maybe just eat a few fewer French fries when you stop at McDonald's that time. Small things that you can do consistently,
you know,
will have a better effect on you overall.
And again, it's this journey that you'll go on, and I'm 59, all right? So I've gone in and out of this cycle, you know, for my entire life, as your level of fitness kind of ebbs and flows, which most of us do.
Absolutely.
When I came back on active duty, I was 44, I think, and I went down to the MEPS to take a physical, and the doctor, you know, looked at me and he said, "You're a Marine, aren't you?" I said, "I am." And he said, I said, "How'd you know?" He said, "We can tell." I said, "What does that mean?" I said, "What does that mean?" He says, "You guys are just a certain way." He said, "You know, there's probably about a dozen guys in there, and I was the oldest one." And he said, "You're in the best physical shape here." And he said, "Can I give you some advice?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "You need to start listening to your body." He said, and he said, "Let me close my eyes. You were an athlete growing up. You joined the Marine Corps, and you've run and you've been active most of your life, playing sports and other things." I said, "Yes." "Your reaction to pain is that you ignore it." Now, he's got his eyes closed. It's like Karnak says thing kind of going.
And I said, yes.
And he said, "And let me guess, you're still trying to do that now." And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Okay, here's my advice. Listen to your body. You can only take so much away from your body and push it before it starts reclaiming itself." And he said, "So
that's a great way to put it."
You know, and it's been great fitness advice for me. He said, "As you get older, listen when your body transmits the message of pain and respect it. And otherwise, your injuries are going to take longer to come back from, and they're harder to come back from as you get older. And you're also going to get tired, and you're not going to want to come back from them because the distance is too great. So listen to your body." And I found that being great advice, because I have a problem because of a rotator cuff injury with inclined bench presses and especially free bar. And so small compromises where if you do belong to a gym, going to a machine where your form is already pre-governed, you don't have to waste muscular tension on keeping the bar straight and things like that. All you have to do is push. There's compromises like that that help you sustain being fit longer without the pain, and they mitigate the pain.
It's true, man. You know, and it's important to note.
I want to be a contributing editor to your column.
Hey, man, I'd be happy to talk to you about it, honestly. You know, because that's one thing. That's a common complaint that I always get from people is, you know, I've got a lot of guys that will write to me on Twitter or Facebook, and they're like, "Hey, man, I'm 15 years older than you. Where do you come off saying old man fitness?" You know?
You can say, because I got my consultant, McNamara. Punk.
I've got my consultant, Mike McNamara.
Yeah. Do you want to fight?
He's also my birthing coach.
Exactly.
You know, if you're interested.
He's my he's my sensei.
Exactly, you know. But what it's really all about is finding that balance for you. You know, and that's really, if there's one overarching theme throughout all the columns, and I hope to maintain as I go forward, is that fitness is a personal thing. It is whatever you want it to be, and it is whatever you need it to be. You know, if you've got professional goals that you need to adhere to, you're still on active duty, or maybe you compete in something, then, you know, your goals are going to be relegated to that. But if you're just a regular old person, you know, you're a veteran, you know, maybe not a veteran, you're whoever is just interested in dropping a few pounds or maybe getting a little bit bigger or toning up a little bit. Fitness does not have to be the worst part of your day.
Right.
It really ought to be the best part. You know, I feel better when I come back from my 3 mile, sometimes run, sometimes walk, sometimes swearing and trudging. But I always feel better when I come back because it's that peace of mind that I developed through being in nature for a little while, burning some calories, getting my body moving. The older I get, the harder it is to get my body to feel right when it's moving. I feel constricted. You know, things ache. I've got old injuries that nag when I get up in the morning, so I limp down the stairs. But I tell you what, when I come back from those 3 miles, I feel like I'm 19 again. I can move.
All right. Here's I got another email question for you. Mac, one of the issues I struggle with is time. I do travel a little bit. My schedule varies. And I don't always have the proverbial 60 minutes to go run 3 miles and then do some kind of push-up, pull-up, or daily seven thing, which is what I tend to try to do. Does Alex have any advice in terms of making this scalable? If I only have 30 minutes, is a 15-minute walk, run, and a daily three doable? Because in my mind, if I can't go an hour, I tend not to go.
I'm glad he asked this question because 100%. This is one of the biggest problems that people run into with fitness is they can't fit that hour into their schedule, either literally or just because they feel like they can't because they're a busy person, you know? You don't have to spend an hour in the gym to improve your fitness game, especially if you've been pretty sedentary, you know, prior. Like, the less you've been doing, the less you need to do to create differences, you know? But no, absolutely not. If you can, if you've only got 15 minutes today to go do something, do something for 15 minutes. You're 15 minutes closer to your overall fitness goals by doing that. You know, if instead you go, I'm guilty of it, especially when I was younger, I would do that all the time. I don't have an hour, so I'm not going to go. It doesn't need to be an hour. You know, go for a walk.
Okay, So let me ask you this. Should I have a 30-minute plan, a 20-minute plan, and then an hour plan? Should I have those in my head? Like, okay, if I only have 20 minutes, I am going to go out and do, you know, maybe I hop on the treadmill and put the incline up, and I do that for 10 minutes, and then I do a daily, a quick daily seven. If I have 30 minutes, I'll do another variation of that. If I have an hour, then I do my normal thing. Do you, in your mind, do you have these workouts already programmed? And then it's simply a question of I'm gonna do something today, and it's gonna fit in my day. Do you have those in your head?
No, I do because I've been doing it for a long time.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean? I've been spending between 15 minutes and 2 hours working out, you know, taking time off here and there, just like you said, with those ebbs and flows, you know, for 12, 13 years straight, you know. So I've got a whole Rolodex in my head of what I can do with the time I've got available.
Got it.
But you don't necessarily need to, you know. Just like you were saying, when you let your body dictate whether you're going to run or walk today, if you've got 15 minutes and you're like, well, I'm going to go do a push-up pyramid or I'm going to go for a walk, it's okay to let your body dictate to a certain extent what it is that you do with those 15 minutes. The problem is, you know, everybody who's ever gone on a long run is familiar with the idea of getting your second wind. You know, don't let the first 30 seconds of pain dictate the rest of your workout.
Okay.
You know, but trust yourself. And, yeah, if you've got 15 minutes and you know you can do something in 15 minutes, it helps to have those, you know, in the back of your head. But you don't have to start. Like, you know, I try my best to remind people all the time, a good brisk walk will burn as many calories as jogging. Jogging is better for you cardiovascularly.
Right.
But you're still moving your ass a distance, burning calories. You're not going to burn more calories jogging than you will with a brisk walk. If all you can do today is a brisk walk, do it, man. However, if you've got an hour, you know, by all means, there's a million resources online. I have not posted any of, like, my personal workouts
right.
Because I don't think that everyone's trying to achieve the same goals that I am.
Right.
But if you have an idea of what you want to achieve, there's a million workouts out there online that you can take and go, all right, I'm going to start with this. But just start with it. Because not every workout is for everyone. And as you're doing it, you might find, well, you know what? This rotator cuff injury really makes incline bench a pain in the ass for me. Maybe I need to switch that out with another upper chest slash shoulder workout, another lift that might compensate for where I can't do this. Maybe I'm going to switch to a machine.
Right.
In my case, because I work out in my basement, there are some lifts then I'm like, you know what? I just can't do this with a straight bar. Right. So I'm going to find an alternative.
Right.
You know? But the real secret is commitment. You know, you can have a whole Rolodex of 15-minute, 30-minute, hour-long workouts. You can be the most well-informed person in the world. You can buy a whole home gym. But if you're not willing to devote those 15 minutes or that hour to fitness in your day, you're never going to do it. So you've really got to, you have to treat it like it's an appointment that you made with someone that's important to you.
Right.
You know, when you text me and you say you're going to be on the air tomorrow, you know, I book it. I'm not doing anything else when Mike McNamara calls me. When I decide that I'm going to work out, I book it. And I'm not going to do anything else when that time rolls around. You've got to do that for yourself.
Here's another email question. Mac, it's always cool when big guys talk fitness and they don't sugarcoat it. It makes the rest of us feel good and also want to get out and be active. One of the things that I found as I started to get my fat ass off the couch and out from behind my desk is the mental health benefits of it. I struggle with PTSD like a lot of dudes do, and I think the number one thing that has benefited my brain and that place is physical fitness. I don't know a whole lot about the whole endorphin thing or any of that bullshit. All I know is this. When I'm more physically active, I feel better about myself. I feel better about life, and I can't really explain it. I know one of the themes of your show is mental health. I think physical health is a big component of mental health. So for all you dumbasses that are sitting on your couch, think you're too fat to get your ass moving, you were Marines. You can do anything. Get your fat ass outside today, like Alex says, and do something. And you'll be surprised, and then in parentheses, probably not, because you've already been down this road. The positive mental health that you will gain simply from getting your fat ass moving. So, to all you fat asses out there, join my fat ass, get your fat ass moving, you'll lose some of the fat off your ass, and you'll get to a better place mentally. Let's do this. Semper Fidelis and happy birthday, boys and girls. 242. If we can join the Marine Corps, we can get through boot camp, we can do all the things we've done as Marines, we can certainly take the steps to be more fit, and I dare say have better mental health. Enjoy the program. All the best to Alex in the delivery room. Mac, always appreciate All Marine Radio. This was awesome. Thanks.
Great email. 100% yeah. True, man.
Mental health. You need to write about that, too.
You know, it's true. It's a big deal for me, man. As we've talked about before, mental health it's near and dear to my heart. Veteran suicide is an issue that's near and dear to my heart. And I think you're totally right. It's not just the chemical reaction to working out. It's not just the endorphin release. But it's the way that it'll shift the way you see yourself. You know, once you start to see yourself accomplishing some of these things that you felt like you couldn't do anymore, you know, I wrote about that because I first started getting back into shape more seriously last year when I was fighting. I was trying, at the time I was training for a competition, but I ended up having to not do it because I separated my retina sparring. But, you know, I was training really hard for a martial arts competition. And I realized the reason why I hadn't in so long was because I assumed I couldn't anymore. I've got too many old injuries and I have too many surgeries. But we eased our way into it. I started rolling with my coach because I was like, it'll be a fun way for me to get back into shape. You know, all I've been doing is lifting. I'm real soft. You know, I'll go do that because grappling is great cardio. You know, and I didn't go with the intention of trying to become a competitor again. I just went to do something. But what ended up happening was a few weeks down the road, I'm doing stuff that I thought I could not do. You know, deep lunges, you know, on double leg takedowns and stuff like that. You know, sliding my knee across the mat, even though this knee is held together with like duct tape and bubble gum. And I genuinely thought I wouldn't be capable of it. But it turns out, as long as you gradually move towards it, man, you'd be amazed at the stuff that you can still do. You know, and because of that, I feel better about myself. When I walk around, I'm not a bar guy, but when I do go to bars to meet friends of mine and whatnot, I feel better about myself. I feel more confident in my ability to handle myself because I've been working out. And it doesn't make me, you know, act like a tough guy, like I'm going to fight you. It actually makes me a little more personable. I'm a little less intimidated. I'm a little less concerned. And I carry this presence with me that I think people can read. You know, it reads as confidence, and people like a confident person. Your whole life will improve as you feel better about yourself, you know? And
right.
That plays a role with the endorphins as well, of course.
No. I mean, and again, any mental health professional will tell you, you know, the first thing to do is to get active. Last question here, and I'll let you go. I appreciate your time this morning, Alex.
It's been a blast.
All right. Mac, you asked him, and he ignored you, and you didn't yoke his ass up. Where do we find Alex's work?
Oh, man, you can find me all over the place. First and foremost, softup.com. Right now, actually, my most current Old Man's Fitness article is over on the right-hand side of the webpage. There's trending stories, and
whoa.
I'm very grateful to the readers because every time I've put out an Old Man's Fitness, it's ended up at, like, number two overall on the site, which has been a big boost for my ego. So you guys are helping me with endorphins.
Wow.
You can find me there for sure. You know, but if you want to find, I'm telling you, man, it feels good. But if you want to,
hey,
find,
can I tell you something? I know a friend of mine's a yoga instructor, and one of the biggest markets in yoga is beginning what is called gentle yoga for people that are overweight and just starting. It's the largest single segment of the yoga market. And, you know, everybody wants to do the whole tie yourself in a pretzel and hang from the ceiling and all the rest of that craziness, right, as instructors. But she said, you know, there's a huge market for gentle yoga. And I think where are most Americans? Are they avid physical fitness freaks? No, you know, they're in and out of it. And so I think your column speaks to that segment of the population that migrates in and out of it and struggles to stay there. And I think that's the majority of the people of the bell curve. And that's probably why you're so popular, in addition to your incredible ability to write.
Well, thank you, man, but I think you're right. I really think that the truth of it is that we're all there, you know? I mean, there's a real small percentage of the population that have achieved their fitness goals and they can just go to sleep happily knowing that. The rest of us are just trying our best, you know? But I think the majority of the internet is tailored to the extreme when it comes to the fitness world. And I try my best to kind of be a counter to that. I want to remind you that it's okay to not look like Sarah Underwood or Dwayne Johnson. If you can get there, man, Dwayne Johnson is my role model. I'd love to be there when I'm 15 years older than I am now. I'd hope to be there when I am.
Andy's,
but it's okay if
Andy,
you're not.
Andy's funny as hell.
Yeah, he's just a legitimately good guy, it seems, you know. But to get back to the question that I already ignored once, you can find me on Facebook, at Facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. You can find me on Twitter at AlexHollings52. And you can find me on Instagram at Archetype52. And you'll be able to see all kinds of dumb pictures of me throwing brake rotors on my bench at home and stuff like that. You know, you'll also get to hear a lot of breaking news stories and stuff like that on Twitter. I tend to interact with people on Twitter more so than most other places.
Got it. What is your favorite social media platform?
Oh, man, they all suck. I hate them all. They're full of people.
My God. It's the worst invention in the history of mankind.
It is, man. It's the worst and the best. I mean, like, I earn my livelihood through social media. Right. I shouldn't bite the hand that feeds. But, you know, people tend to be quick to scream at one another via social media in a way they wouldn't necessarily in person most times. But I think that Twitter's the best platform when it comes to, like, getting to interact with people in a one-on-one way. You know, Facebook, you know, the things about their organic reach algorithm and stuff like that, you got to pay money for anybody to see what you post. But on Twitter, you know, you can send me a message on Twitter. I've got my phone on me most of the time. I can't always respond, but I can almost guarantee you that I'm going to see what you write to me on Twitter, whereas on Facebook I may not. You know, and Instagram is more about just sharing selfies than it is about talking to one another. So I would argue Twitter's probably the best one, but, I mean, they're all just full of people yelling at each other these days, you know? I promise you won't get any of that from me.
The concept of articulate discourse, not so much anymore.
It's
right. It's yelling the loudest, getting the most hits, all of that is what it's about, and it's in my opinion mostly pathetic, because as opposed, and this the latest thing with Devin Kelly is example of it. You know, our discussion today, I think, begins, it's a footnoted based empirically and research done that you can read about at the website 538. It's real remedies. You know, I think, Alex, you and I are both common sense kind of guys in terms of, yeah, bump stocks, ban them yesterday.
Yeah.
You don't need that.
I agree.
But, you know, these things, we need to do our best to stop. And you can't completely stop them in a society that has a Second Amendment and is based at its, in its roots in a free society. You are going to have people that are deficient mentally, and they do terrible things. You know, but what are the steps, what are the reasonable steps that we can take to protect, you know, the right of innocent people to live their lives in peace, and that predators don't get to continue to prey on them? That kind of enlightened discourse is to me what attracts audiences and what makes the media good. But we don't seem to have much of that. That's just
I really think it's this upvote downvote mentality that we've developed now. You know, and there's a lot of talk all over the media, you know, from people on the right and the left about, you know, these ideologies that our country was based on. You know, and if you talk to a conservative, he'll tell you that it's the conservative ideology that was the foundation, the bedrock of our country. And if you talk to a liberal person, they'll tell you that it was the liberal ideologies that was the bedrock. I would argue the one ideology no one talks about is the most important one, and that is compromise. That's always been the basis of our country. You know, the American Revolution, we think of it as a war against England, but the revolution was really a few years later when we came up with the Constitution and this new form of government, you know? America wasn't born with the form of government we have now. It came a few years after independence. And that was an argument. That was a days-long debate with Alexander Hamilton just talking and talking and talking and people hating him for it. You know, and the reason why we have the Bill of Rights is because we could not agree on everything to go in the Constitution, so we needed to compromise. And one of those compromises was establishing the Bill of Rights. You know, that's always been how we've had to do it. We've always had to have a respectful debate and find a middle ground that works for everybody. It doesn't mean everyone's going to get what they want, but the idea is that we're a large group of people with varied interests, you know, personal and professional, and we need to find a compromise that benefits as many as possible without curtailing the freedoms of the whole. And in order to do that, you got to talk. Not yell, not caps lock.
Okay, but also this takes us to our last subject. and I promise I'll let you go. That doesn't happen in Washington, D.C. anymore. And specifically, okay, it doesn't happen within our Congress. I believe Donald Trump, the phenomenon that is Donald Trump, is the expression of a lot of the American people that they are dissatisfied, right? There's no other way that he can get elected saying the things that he said, with and people overlooking some of the things that he carries with him as baggage as a politician, without this incredible anger at what they see as a dysfunctional form of government. How does that change?
You know,
how does that change? Right. How does that change? Because what you said, compromise, exactly true. We have the House that is based on population. We have the Senate, which every one of the 50 states has an equal voice. The compromise that forces is substantial. We have an electoral college system, which says that which was put into place in part because all the colonies didn't want to see the major population centers dominate every election, that there was only so many votes that they would get. And so this electoral college thing was put into play in terms of our election. This constant balance between population centers and rural areas and this need for compromise. What changes this? Because I was talking last week about the future. What does the future look like for the United States? We can't pass a budget.
It makes me angry.
We don't have civil
continuing resolution is killing
us. Right, and it is. I mean, if you go through the whole And again, the filibuster cloture and all that, that's not part of the original thought of the founding fathers relative to the Senate. The Senate used to operate on simple majority. And in 1804, Aaron Burr cleaned up some parliamentarian stuff, and they put in this thing called cloture. It's since been bastardized to now be something that's used that you have to have 60 senators that are in favor of something to get it through the Senate. It is now, the Senate is now the roadblock in the nation to legislation. It is not this.
Even when they can agree, you know, Congress and the Senate both passed defense budgets that were different budgets, and they have yet to reconcile them in a way that can actually get one pushed through. We're already more than a month into the new fiscal year. So even when they agree on something, they still can't make it happen. You know, but my answer to you, in all honesty, would be today is the type of day that can change that. You know, today there are local elections going on all over the country. These are the elections you really got to pay attention to. I know that we get really wrapped up in the presidential election and things like that, but I'm here to tell you, you know, we're almost a year into a Donald Trump presidency, and aside from the general levels of outrage on social media, life for most Americans has not really changed much, right? It's because the president is one guy in one office, you know, thousands of miles away from many of us, when there's millions of local politicians that are making decisions that affect your life every day. And those local politics, it's a trickle-up policy. Local politics can dictate state politics, which can dictate national politics. But you've got to be involved in levels that are lower than just that one presidential election every 4 years. If you really want to see things change in Congress and in the Senate, in your local government, you've got to be actively involved. You need to know who your senator is, who your congressman is, congresswoman maybe. You need to know who your city council members are if you're not happy with the way your town's being run. It's days like today that can dictate the future. The problem is, just like with fitness, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, it takes a long-standing commitment to initiate a change when something is this systemically screwed up. But the way to do it is to know who your politicians are and vote for the people that you think have a reasonable voice. If enough people vote for enough reasonable people, reason will prevail. You know, it's as simple as that. But we need to pull ourselves away from this idea that the president decides everything, which is what we've kind of romanticized that idea because it's such a spectacle, these presidential campaigns. Local government makes a difference. State government makes a difference. And you need to focus on those.
All right. I want you to give some thought. And the next time you come back, I want to talk about the future. How does this change? What makes it change? Because anybody who gets any, okay, and so the final seedlings, anybody who gets elected is getting elected with the same money. So Hollings doesn't run, McNamara does, accepting money from the same people. He goes and takes his place. Well, what makes McNamara different? Answer, nothing. Beholden to the same people. So what changes this in our government? Because, again, I think American elected leaders are pathetic. Americans are incredible. And I offer you evidence in Houston. I offer you evidence in Puerto Rico. I offer you evidence in Florida that Americans pull together, and now we're seeing it again in Texas. Americans pull together, and they get through stuff. And they're reasonable people. They're reasonable people. And we deserve better than we're getting. So I want you to give some thought. How does it change? What changes it? Because the road it's on now, you know, the president says something. Mitch McConnell says something, Chuck Schumer says something, Nancy Pelosi says something, right? And Mr. Ryan says something, right? And then nothing gets done. And it's gone that way for years. So that's your assignment.
You got it.
All right, tell everybody where to find your work one more time.
All right, find me on Facebook at Alex Hollings Writer. Find me on Instagram at Archetype52, and find me on Twitter at AlexHollings52. And, of course, find me on SoftRep.com. If you want just me, SoftRep.com/author/AlexHollings.
There you have it. From soup to nuts, Alex Hollings, expectant father. So how soon are you going to have your baby?
Oh, man, she's full term now. The due date is in 2 weeks, but that could happen any time. It's already a big baby in classic Hollings fashion. So, nice. You know, any day now. You'll see on Facebook. I'll shoot you a message.
All right. Well, good luck. It'll be one of the great days of your life. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
There you have it. From a contributing editor at SoftRep. And a guy, Alex talks fast, too. Here's an email. Mac, I swear to God, he sounds like a machine gun, the way he talks. He can talk fast, and he's a smart guy. And he knows a lot about a lot of different issues. I've never checked out his columns. I will certainly do so today. Appreciate him being on the program. But, wow, the dude can talk pretty fast. All right, we're going to take a break. More of Armoring Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum, it's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.